The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McRae. Corn and bean prices are slowly climbing higher, and the livestock sector may have some marketing opportunities yet this year. What should you be considering right now in order to get the most for your production? It's our topic on this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, just text PROVEN to 31313. Most of us saw a dramatic decrease in commodity price levels earlier this year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Since those lows in the late winter and early spring, we've seen some slow growth. Acreage reports and weather concerns have also helped boost prices lately. Are there marketing opportunities for producers now, or is it still a wait-and-see situation? Chip Nellinger with Blue Reef Agri Marketing is my guest as we talk about the markets and the information he's receiving and sharing with farmers this summer. Chip Nellinger with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing joins me. Chip is in Morton, Illinois. Chip, perhaps I should start by just asking you to talk a little bit about the crops and the weather there. I think you're around the Peoria area, isn't that right?
That's right. Our office is in Morton, and we kind of cover really several states across the Corn Belt, but office is right there in downtown Morton, Illinois.
What have you been hearing from the folks that you work with? Because certainly I'm guessing you've got farmers that you're talking to really all across the Midwest. In general, what have you heard so far about crop progress and how the weather looks for a lot of them?
Yeah, in general, I think the crops look very good, especially beans. But obviously, we're going to need some rain. It's been very hot. And certainly right here, if you look at a drought monitor, basically, just a little bit of a radius right around Peoria, Illinois, has been kind of a desert. Now, we received some pop-up showers here in the last 24 hours, but we're definitely going to need some more rain to finish this thing out in any circumstance because the weather's been so hot. So corn-wise, we're probably taking a little bit of a step backwards across a lot of areas just because it's been so hot. And relatively dry. If you've caught a rain, you've definitely been lucky here recently. And so that's going to be closely watched come Monday afternoon as far as that crop progress report is concerned, as well as that ongoing forecast, because as you get out into the following week, it looks like there's more impressive heat building, even hotter than it's been this last week. So that's very, very concerning, especially if you don't get any rain ahead of that. And they're talking, you know, potentially one weather model has, you know, kind of the southern two-thirds of Illinois, maybe the southern half of Indiana, down into Kentucky and Tennessee, up to and you know, slightly over 100 degrees potentially next week. So we're going to definitely need some rain very, very soon, or we're going to start going backwards.
I want to get into the weather and some of the drivers behind the prices right now, but perhaps let's look back here a week or so at one of the big drivers, or I don't know if we'll call it surprises, but acreage. Talk about the acreage report that came out, certainly a lot different than what the prospective plantings were way back in March.
Yeah, it definitely was. And it was a surprise. In fact, I believe that was the biggest change from the March to June acreage report in history, almost 5 million acres difference in corn. And of course, the bean number didn't go up nearly as much as what the market thought. And it left a lot of people scratching their heads saying, where did all the acres go? And, you know, we'll see. I think you have to take the USDA at face value. I know that here in the Eastern Corn Belt, it got very wet late. And I know for a fact that there was some prevent plant even here on some prime ground in Illinois just because it got that wet that late. We had kind of two separate you know, planting seasons here. We got in very, very early on, you know, a portion of this crop, and then it got really cool and really wet, and it got late. And so there was some prevent plant around, and I think price dictated some of that as well. We certainly had, you know, quite a price discrepancy from the time that March report was taken, you know, at the end of February, basically, to June. We were right in the middle of the lockdown and you know, ethanol shut, plants shutting down. And so the prices were a lot different, too. And so that price alone may have dictated, you know, economically by the textbook, you know, fewer corn acres. And so we definitely saw that as reported by the USDA. And it is a game changer in some respects, especially if we're going to face some hot, dry weather here for the rest of July and into August, because, you know, with a near 5 million acre cut in corn, you know, at trend line yield in the, you know, just shy of 180, counting some of that 178 range, you know, you're talking about several hundred million bushel swing right off the carryout. If for some reason the heat would continue and dryness and we take 4 or 5 bushels off of trend line yield, you know, we could end up looking at 2 billion or maybe a touch under carry out in corn versus 5 weeks ago, the market was expecting maybe upwards of 4 billion bushels. So that acreage number is definitely part of the equation. It was a very friendly surprise. And now it's going to come down to what the final yields will be. And, you know, right now we're definitely right in the middle of some very hot, dry weather currently.
We've seen these corn and bean prices slowly moving upward. Has most of that, you feel, been with the difference in the acreage, or now how much is the weather market, if you will, playing into it?
Yeah, you know, I think it's, at least in the last week, been mostly about the weather. I think the initial jump there on the report day was kind of, you know, readjusting to the much greater, fewer corn acres than expected. But now it is all about the weather, just simply because of that difference. You know, you take several hundred million potential bushels out of the equation with 5 million less corn acres. And now if we're looking at something potentially sub-trend line yield, you know, that really changes the carryout dynamics. And the funds, I think, going into that report, were not a record, but very close to a record short. And so they got maybe a little ahead of themselves, and the whole market did. The whole market psychology was kind of set up so that, you know, if you told someone, I think corn can rally, they kind of laughed at you and, you know, thought you had three heads or something. And so the whole market just got too bearish. The psychology was too bearish that we're going, you know, sub $3. We kind of forgot that we got a whole growing season ahead here, and that a record yield wasn't in the bag, and you know that's kind of hitting us in the face right now.
Well, let's focus on the corn here for just a second. The folks that you're talking to, the producers out there, have they still been though slow to price anything or do much on the board because their guaranteed price with crop insurance, they may still be making more on that than they could get, you know, wherever they're going to sell that corn locally. What have you been hearing?
Yeah, and that's a great point. That's such a case-by-case basis, and that's why it's so important to have a marketing plan, and each plan is different. So it depends on what crop insurance that you do have. And in a lot of cases, you know, if you take the highest level of crop insurance, 85%, or there were some, you know, private add-on products that bumped you up to 90 or even 95%, you're still well under where crop insurance kicks in. And especially if you're in a hot, dry area, you know, you could cause yourself more harm than good in selling below crop insurance guarantees, especially if your yield's going backwards. So in some cases, it is better to just rely on that crop insurance guarantee until you know more about prices. Certainly, if we'd rally up into 385, 390, challenge $4 December corn futures, it might make more sense. And that's a possibility. But, you know, unfortunately, right now, the next kind of resistance level would be up in those low 370s. And that's just basically right where, you know, crop insurance starts kicking in. So, you know, certainly if you have a lower, if you're at 75, 70%, 80%, it's a little bit different scenario than if you take the highest coverage level. Your APH plays into that. So everyone's different, but that crop insurance definitely is something that needs to be a consideration in your marketing plan this year.
And that's where I wanted to go. I mean, you know, it so much depends on where that crop insurance level might be right now. So is there a market strategy for a lot of producers, or is it more, we just got to hold on for a little bit and see if we can eke out a little bit more before we begin to put something in place?
Well, in my mind, you know, down here in the 350s, 360s, it's probably remain patient. It gets tougher though, if we'd move up into the 370s and certainly starts getting a little easier in the mid 380s and 390 plus to do some things. In my mind, and we're not typically big proponents. Obviously we're brokers, but we're more cash grain oriented. But of any year in the last 5 years, this might be the place on corn and beans to a lesser extent, where you maybe want to implement some put strategies just to protect against, you know, change for the better in weather and cooler, wetter conditions. They will drop the bottom out from under this again. And, you know, maybe spending a little bit of money on some puts and being willing to maybe roll those up if the market continues to go higher might be something to consider. Again, that's case by case and depends on each individual operation. Beans, to me, north of $9, just relatively speaking, start making a little more sense than corn still struggling to get over 360. So, you know, that's a little easier trigger to pull in my mind, especially if we, you know, maybe challenge the 9.25 area or higher on November bean futures. Just seems like an easier trigger to pull there, although we are going to need some, you know, some more rain here. August is the month that makes bean yields, and you know, certainly July has definitely been on the hot, dry side. In fact, I just read that if we continue like this, could possibly be the hottest July on record. And so we're definitely going to need some more rain to follow up and finish these beans out in August. But to me, north of $9 beans is an easier trigger to pull than, you know, something in the 350s or 360s on December corn futures.
What are you hearing from ethanol biofuel plants in your area or even beyond? Are we back up to where we had been? I know in our area, certainly the capacity, or at least those, they weren't running at full capacity for quite a while. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I don't think we're quite back to where we were pre, you know, COVID lockdown, but we've certainly increased that production way faster than what my worst case fear was. So I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I think this week we were maybe 10, 11 million bushels below what's normal for like a 3-year average for this time of year. Normally, I think we're about 101, 102 million bushels per week usage. And I think we're just a touch over 90, maybe around 91 million. So it's come back nicely, but still not full bore. Although I think it's come back faster than maybe what the market expected. And, you know, on the lows, that was part of the reason we were, you know, kind of struggling around that 3.25 level on December futures, was the expectation that export, or I should say ethanol demand, should be coming lower on future reports. And it likely will, but we've kind of bounced back faster, I think, than what the market expected. So, you know, all told, I think it's a good sign. Be better if we were up in that 100 million, you know, bushel range a week, but we're at least knocking on the door of that north of 90, and that's way faster than what personally I thought we'd get back to, and I think the market's pleased as well, and hopefully that that driving can continue as we go deeper into summer in here.
How do you feel we're doing on exports right now, and even the opportunities? Of course, we hear that China is going to still live up to their commitments, and perhaps we're getting there, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a fear that I have. That's something I think that's we have to take a little caution against. You know, I think that is something that could come lower on both corn and bean demand going forward. It seems like our corn exports have been decent at times, but recently here we've pulled those back into the, you know, mid to upper 20 million bushel, maybe 30 million. We need to really see some more 40 plus million weeks going forward. So I think that's a potential, red flag would be corn export demand. And I think the same thing can be said on beans. We have a pretty lofty level hit, at least a bar to hit as far as our export projections on both corn and beans, but especially beans. China's been a better buyer recently, but they really aren't hitting the numbers that I think they need to hit in order to hit that number. What was it, 30 some million, almost $40 billion? I would say that they're well behind the pace on our total ag buying to hit that phase one trade deal number. And so there's still time for them to really pick up steam, but each week that passes, they've been a buyer, obviously, but just in my opinion, not a large enough, aggressive enough buyer. I fear that going forward, we're going to continue to see tweaks lower in total corn and bean demand, and that's going to offset a little production damage if we see that from the hot, dry weather. So definitely something to watch going forward. That won't all happen at once with a snap of a fingers on one particular USDA supply and demand report, but over several months, if they just continue to tweak those numbers lower, it adds up. So I think that is something that I'm a little bit fearful of. Doesn't mean that we can't rally. It doesn't mean that this hot, dry weather won't still affect prices positively, but it may mean that maybe we don't go as high as what we would have with stronger demand numbers. And as I said, there's always time. The market's hopeful that China can pick up the pace here and start buying a lot more beans and some other, maybe some more corn and wheat as well. But each week that ticks off the calendar is that much closer to, winter time frame when the southern hemisphere is going to take over and be more competitive than we are on the world market.
Sure. Hey, Chip, let's jump over to the livestock. Perhaps we'll go to the cattle first. A little bit like the grains, we have gained back some ground if you go clear back to when the virus outbreak kind of took over the markets back in March or so. Have we gotten a lot of these cattle through that we had pushed back? How far behind are we still on getting some of these big cattle through the system?
Yeah, that's going to be a question that's hard to answer, and that's what the market's searching for. I think we're closer and closer every day that goes by. I think one day we're going to wake up and say, "Hey, what happened here to all these cattle? All these numbers that we've been working through, and the heavy cattle, they're just gone, and the calf market will catch on fire." I think we're close to that. We're probably not quite there yet. I think this heat will kind of speed that process up, and eventually we're going to wake up someday and these packers are going to get more aggressive on cash bids, and the next leg higher will happen. It's been a little bit slow to occur. The market's tried to rally a couple times, can't seem to hold or follow through in those rallies, but I'm hopeful that here by first week or 10 days of August that we're through most of those heavyweight cattle and those numbers. We're killing a lot of animals every week. That kill has really bounced back, and that's helped, but it's keeping some product on the market, and our boxed beef has been a little bit weak in here and slow to stabilize. But I think we're closer and closer to that, and I'm still hopeful that particularly the August, but more importantly the October and December live cattle contracts can see higher highs than what we've seen here recently.
I'm not sure how many livestock guys and gals you're working with, but are they getting close to being back to the black on any of these cattle? Because we've certainly been in the red on most of them that we've had so far this year.
Yeah, it's definitely been a rough quarter or two. I think we're getting closer. Probably the current groups aren't going to make that, especially if they've been backed up. You got to feed them longer. But I think on stuff that's going against the October board and for sure the December board, things look a lot better out there. Obviously, we got to get through this heat, and that's going to affect weight gain as well, and maybe add a little bit of cost. But I think anything going that's on feed now that's going to go against the October or December contract, things look a lot better on the margins than they do, immediately here, or what's gone, anything that's gone the last few weeks.
I don't know how close you'd be following things with like the 30-14 and the 50-14 that they're trying to get passed with cattle marketing and try to bring some, I don't know, maybe we should say market balance back between the packers and those that are selling cattle. Any thoughts on where you see this thing going anytime soon? Does that play into this market at all, or is it all just continue to be wishful thinking at this point?
Well, I think there's a lot of wishful thinking. If something does happen, let's say this. I think the market's open to that and something that would be helpful, but what the final result's going to be, I think no one's really holding their breath on that, as well as some of these antitrust suits that are kind of in progress. So obviously there's some hope to maybe get a little more transparency and some more fluid open cash markets. That's been a frustration for a while, but we may be quite some time before we have some sort of a final say so on that. And even when it comes, we'll take a I'll believe it when I see it type attitude, with whatever resolution they do come out with.
We've all been too cynical too long, haven't we? We have to wait to see
Yeah,
something, I
see,
think.
unfortunately, that's the case. Yeah.
Thoughts on the hogs here before we wrap up what you're seeing in that sector?
Yeah, hogs have been the toughest market in here, and that most recent quarterly hogs and pigs report we had out a couple weeks ago, just kind of solidified that we've just got too much supply out there. I think part of that has been, I think there has been a lot of liquidation on the sow side, as well as maybe some of these, wiener pigs. But some of that has been due, the liquidation, I think, has been slowed because we just simply can't move the animals through the pipeline right now. We are killing more. We've seemed to have stabilized, but the cash market's just horrendous here in the 20s. I do think there'll be more liquidation going forward once there's a little more capacity to get those animals through the system. The deferreds look way better to me, so I sense it. Unfortunately, that we've been at a low enough price that it is driving some of the smaller producers out. I know that for a fact, particularly out of the East. There's not a lot of small independent guys left in Illinois anymore. There still are in Indiana and some other places, and I've heard some rumblings and some confirmation that some of those guys, they're just done with it. And unfortunately, that's what happens in a low price environment. And longer term, though, that's good. The pain is now, it's no good if you're in that situation losing money and closing up shop. But what it means is the supply is going to be tighter down the road. And I think these deferreds, out into to winter and next spring and summer, can take on a much better tone. And they're already pricing in, I think, a lot of liquidation out there and some better things, better prices. But it's just the pain of getting from here where we're at oversupplied to out there, say 12 months from now when things should tighten up again. It is a lot of pain, and unfortunately, it's just a long process to get through. But I think we're getting closer and closer. But it has certainly been an ugly, ugly year or even two on the hog side, and some of that is just an oversupply situation that I think we're slowly getting back to equilibrium with some liquidation here.
Overall, with the crops and livestock, and if there's an area you want to zero in on, that's fine. But with COVID now, we're seeing a resurgence of cases in some spots of the nation. Perhaps we're going to go back into some shutdowns of certain sectors. How much risk is there to some of those markets still, or do we already have a lot of that already into the market, do you feel?
No, I think there's still risk there, and obviously, part of the huge, price break that we saw both hogs and cattle, earlier this spring was due to the fact of COVID going through the, various packing plants and causing shutdowns. I don't think we're immune to that. If you saw further shutdowns, either here or somewhere in the world, you certainly see some supply chain disruptions. If we'd have a packing plant, or more than one go down again because of a resurgence in that virus, it certainly is risk there. And that's just an unknown we're going to have to live with for quite some time. We don't even know what the kind of the quote unquote new normal is, how we're going to come out of this thing. certainly been hit very hard on the food service and restaurant side of the equation. Things are trying to get open back up, but a lot of restaurants just, you know, not opening again. So we certainly have a lot of challenges still out there, and those risks are out there. You know, further resurgence as we get colder temperatures this fall and winter, you know, a plant shutdown, certainly still a risk there, unfortunately, and something we're going to have to deal with for quite some time, potentially.
Chip, let's wind up with this. You know, these markets, we've kind of talked through them here, and in some cases, it's keep a watchful eye, but there's not much of a move to make at this point. Is that kind of the overall message? I kind of hate that type of message because you always feel like you want to be doing something, but overall, is that kind of the strategy right now?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good overview. You know, again, it depends on your individual crop insurance situation and what your guarantees are. I think right now that can generally probably be the overall theory if we're in the 350s or 360s on December corn. If this hot, dry weather would push us quickly north of there, if the funds want to get out of the rest of their short position and maybe build a small net long position, and you tacked on 20, 30 cents on corn, that's probably a different discussion, and maybe there's a little more room to make some maneuvers there. And I think the same can be said on beans. I'm probably a more willing seller of beans up here north of $9. Certainly, if they push up to 9.25 or above, it's a little easier to make that call. But, you know, again, if you're in an area that hasn't had much rain for the last 2 or 3 weeks and fighting 95 to 100 degree temperatures, that's you know, that's a hard pill to swallow, and you know, may kind of more dictate some sort of a paper option type strategy than getting aggressively sold in an environment where yields might be shrinking. It's the absolute hardest environment to market grain in is a weather situation, a hot, dry summer. And unfortunately, it looks like that's for many areas what it's shaping up to be like right now. And that's a very difficult environment to market grain in. You have to really be nimble. So I'd say right now, patience might be the play, but this market can move quickly, so we need to have a plan and have our finger on the trigger because it can change quickly.
I agree. We look for that weather market, and then when the price is up there, we begin to doubt if we're going to have enough to sell. So that's kind of typically how we farmers think sometimes. I appreciate the time. This has been a good conversation.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
Many of us have been here before. Which way will the weather turn? Will there be advancement with exports? And of course, there's the situation we've never seen before. How will a global pandemic impact national and world economies moving forward? All will be factors, of course, and hopefully our conversation with Chip has provided some information to help all of us with decision-making in the last half of this year. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.